like both guys. I think both guys are good players. I think both guys can help our team. All right, so why do you continually try to get me to say something that doesn't respect one of them? I'm not going to. So quit asking.
Nick Saban, you're a football coach, not the Lord Almighty. And if you think you're going to get away with not answering questions about who Alabama's starting quarterback is, dude, wake up. Hey, it's 8 o'clock Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship station of the 2018 Western Conference Champion Expansion, Vegas Golden Knights. We are streaming on the LV Sports Network, and we can be seen on Facebook Live. If you're listening for the first time, this is Out of Line, and we are here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9. I'm Brian Feldman. Directly in front of me, producer and Lotus Broadcasting sports radio personality, my boy Mags, better known as Chris Magnum Chapman. And on my right on your radio dial is executive producer Jose Valonte. Aside from working tirelessly to keep us relevant on social media, Jose always makes sure to add his dos pesos at every given opportunity. And very soon, he will be the host of his own sports radio talk show on KSHP Radio called Sudden Death. I will be playing the roles of Jose and Magnum combined on the show. It's going to be fun. Hey, on Twitter, we are at Out of Line 1340 AM, and on Facebook, it's even easier to remember. It's Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. Opinions are welcome. The Fox Sports Studio line is 706. How about 702?
Yeah, that works.
876-1340. Just use it.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is hooked up every week. Thanks to Bubby's University on South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo, a great place to check out every game. Jose, I know you had a rough one, but I got to hear, brother, what is on tap, man?
I'm back, baby, and no matter what Brian said while I was gone, I know you miss me. Probably both of you, but I'm going to say Brian more than anything.
Oh, God almighty.
Cool thing today, man. We got Al Bernstein coming on to talk to us about Triple G Canelo Part 2. That should be really fun. If you know about Al Bernstein, huge boxing guy. A lot of knowledge there. It's going to be fun as well. Also, final Las Vegas 51s report of the season. Can you believe that? It's literally going to be Las Vegas 51s report no more after today. And GM Chuck Johnson will join us today to say goodbye to the New York Mets and Cashman Field as well. We're going to talk about UNLV football's impressive game yesterday, in my opinion, against USC. They gave them all they could handle for the first three quarters at the Coliseum. We'll talk about that as well. We got some great fantasy football tips that we're going to give you guys today as well. And we're giving away some tickets for the fourth annual Box Fan Expo Day. I'm sorry, the day of the big fight. That should be fun. That's what I got, so stick around. I'm Jose Valonte, and What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubby's University, where you can earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is a good time. Bring your Rebel ID, and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. Yes, that means they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information.
Hit us up with some blazing mags.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
It is Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 North Durango, a Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital. Two happy hours every day, and America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. Starting a week from tomorrow, we'll be there every Monday night throughout the NFL season for Monday night football parties, giving away replica jerseys, wing parties, a whole lot more, man. Definitely come on down. Check me out. Jose will be there when he's not slaving at the other gig, but we're going to have a good time. And come on down, man. I'll hook you up. Say hello. Blazin', man. I mean, you know, I'm going to start off with Blazin'. We are definitely going to talk about the Rebels game because the first three quarters of that game, if you're a Rebels fan, was Blazin' based on what we've seen the last several seasons. Really nice to see. A vastly improved defense, an offense that definitely can click. We definitely see the ability of Armani Rodgers at times. And Lexington Thomas, man, when that guy gets into space, and even when he's not in space, he finds creases and cracks and can get the job done. But I'm going to start out before we jump into that. I don't know if you guys saw anything or saw the highlights of the U.S. Open tennis tournament in your home state, Mags, yesterday.
No, my home state is New Jersey.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's next
Get
door.
Get it right. Get it right.
Well, yeah. Come on.
That's why it's out online.
I don't care. I've never been there.
Well, you're missing out.
No, I've been to Atlantic City, New Jersey, okay? And I've been to Buffalo, New York.
Atlantic City, the city destroyed by never mind.
But what I want to say at the U.S. Open is Nick Kyrgios and played Roger Federer yesterday. Roger Federer did something he has never done in his career in a match yesterday. Did you see what he did?
No.
He actually hit the ball on the side of the net. He was so far off when he ran. It was an unbelievable drop shot by Nick Kyrgios. He got to it and threw it off to the side of the net. Hit it not over the net, but onto the side, which I did not know is legal. And it is, as long as it hits in play. And his opponent, Kyrgios, was so flabbergasted, he didn't even go after the ball. I was like, wait, did that just really happen? This guy is unbelievable at his age, Mags. The greatest tennis player that ever lived. I really think so. I think Roger Federer is the greatest player.
I think, you know, because I do watch a bit of tennis, as does our buddy Frank.
Did you know that you can hit it on the side of the net?
I did not know that. But I will say we are very lucky and blessed in that we are living in a time where arguably the two greatest men's tennis players ever, in both Roger
Maybe
Federer.
Three. I mean,
I don't think Novak Djokovic is quite at that level. Where he's in discussion as being better than Pete Sampras.
No, you're right. You're right. But I mean, he definitely can play at their level at times.
He's definitely top five.
Yes.
You know, because
he's very inconsistent is the problem, though.
Well, he's been injured a lot too. So that's really the thing.
He's been hurt.
Tennis, you know, it's grueling. I mean, we saw last night Marin Cilic was in almost a 5-hour match. The match ended at 2:20 in the morning. These guys played for over 4 hours. Think about that. You're out there by yourself for 4 hours. Yeah. It's not like. It's almost as I would say between that and IndyCar / NASCAR, I don't know if there's two more grueling sports because you're all alone. You don't have a team. It's not like baseball where, you know what, sometimes the ball's hit to you, sometimes it's not. Or if you're at bat, maybe you're on the bench. You know, it's with tennis, it's so mental because if you ever read any excerpts from Andre Agassi's book, he just points out how unbelievably grueling mentally the game of tennis is because you're on an island. You really are. And it's you against the other guy. There's no help from the officials 99.9% of the time. There's no bad calls that go against you that cost you matches, especially now with the challenge system that they have in place. I mean, if you're in a five-set, think about the match that Jonathan Isner played couple of years ago at Wimbledon.
I got tired watching started to get exhausted.
It
you
was
needed
so
to get hydrated.
Long that they had to come back the next day.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. You know, and I agree 100%. People don't look at tennis, yes, is physically demanding.
You're running on that concrete.
But what there's also, Mags, as you pointed out, where you compared it was a great analogy comparing it to auto racing. Auto racing, the most important thing with auto racing, years ago I interviewed a guy named Tom Sneva, before your time.
I know who Mags will probably remember.
He was famous for being a runner-up in the Indy 500. The guy was like always the bridesmaid, but he was a hell of a driver. And I talked to him after a race years ago, one of my very first assignments ever in this business. And he said that living normal life is hard, not driving the race car, because he's gotten to the point where when you're driving that car, it is focused for 2.5 straight hours. You can't for 1 minute think all of a sudden like, you know what? I forgot to get milk today, this morning. Next thing you know, you're in the wall. I mean, you got to concentrate. And you know how hard that is? You're going in a circle for 2.5 hours with little breaks here and there to get your tires changed. And when I say little, if it's a 20-second break, your pitch crew's getting fired.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have no time to really, that's your little breather. And the whole time you're doing that little break, your pit chief is yelling in your ear, here's what you got to do, get off this. Tom Stevens said it is chaos, literally controlled chaos for about 2.5 to 3 hours, and you can think of nothing else. So when you're doing normal life, he's like, it's so slow and so anticlimactic. It's almost it almost mentally messes you up.
Well,
and I never thought about it like that, but tennis, the analogy, Mags, of tennis to water racing. Tennis, the 6 inches between your ears plays a much bigger role in tennis than you would think. And especially, Mags, in those grueling, long matches, you've got to be very mentally sound. And if you're not, you're going to lose. It's that simple. We see when Serena Williams has a mentally off match, she gets beat by people she could beat with her feet. But she gets beat because it's mental.
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at tennis players in general, they are, first of all, on the women's side, most of them are over 6 feet tall.
You know, they're big ladies.
They're very tall ladies, but they are an on the men's side, when you look at like when Roger Federer takes off his shirt, he's like ripped. I mean, he's really in
the body
amazing.
Percentage has to be
it's
very
probably
low.
Like 1%, you know. And you know, and that's I think what sets Serena apart from everyone, because you know, Serena is not the prototypical body type. When you look at Serena against all these others, but Serena
the
is
legs,
so
the
her,
legs.
Well, that's just it, you know.
Dude, her legs are huge.
She
man.
Is seriously. and
Robert, remember Robert Newhouse of the Dallas Cowboys? Serena's got his legs.
And the funny thing is, I think you could make the argument that Serena Williams not only is the greatest, I mean, there's no doubt about it that she is the greatest women's tennis player ever. And I love Steffi Graf. Don't get me wrong, I love Steffi Graf. But I think you can make the argument that
Steffi
Serena
Graf
Williams
was
good.
You're forgetting about Martina Navratilova.
No. Steffi Graf was beautiful.
She was
an amazing player. Yeah. But, you know, I actually saw her at Walmart of all the places. But you could make the argument that Serena Williams not only is the greatest women's tennis player, not only the greatest women's athlete, but I think the argument could be made that Serena Williams is the greatest athlete ever. Not just
the
women.
The statement. I think the argument could be made. I can't.
If you look at how dominant she's been.
I can't really argue it. I mean, it is amazing how talented and how athletically gifted Serena Williams is. 100% correct.
I mean, she has gone through generations. Yeah. I mean, she. I think
wiped her sister out on Friday. Just beat the living
I think she won
her
first
her
major
sister.
In like 98 or 99. Yeah. Here we are, 2018. It's almost 20 years later.
But you know, she still hasn't won the most majors yet. If she wins this, she'll tie for the most majors
with Steffi Graf,
of all time.
I think.
No,
right?
I can't think of the person. It's not Steffi Graf. Let me take a look. Google it. Maybe it is. Google. I know. If they said if she wins this, she will tie.
I'm pretty
for the
sure
most
it's Graf.
You would think so.
But see, here's the biggest thing about Serena. You guys are saying that she's possibly the greatest athlete out there overall. But dude, it shows you that you can do whatever you want, no matter where you come from, bro. She came from Compton.
Oh, it's Margaret.
She came from
Margaret
Compton.
Court. She passed Steffi Graf.
Yes,
and she has won. And Margaret Court was winning at a time when tennis wasn't nearly as...
There was 12
as
tennis players on the tour, and half of them were men. So, I mean, she was beating six people every year. It's like when Doyle Brunson won two bracelets in the World Series of Poker, and he wrote all these books and everything. There was like 40 people competing then, not 10,000.
Yeah, two or three tables.
Yeah,
that's
you know,
it,
I mean,
yeah.
Seriously, well, it's such a different game now. But listen,
and I think with women, with Serena, I think for a lot of these girls, it's gotta almost be like when you were fighting Mike Tyson back in his prime. Because this girl she's playing today, Kaia Kanepi, Serena should destroy this girl. And this girl knows that she has to absolutely play her best. And Serena has to have an off day for her to beat her.
Yeah, it's got
to
be a Buster Douglas day. That's the only way it's happening.
Exactly
it's going to have to be a Buster Douglas day. And we know it. Listen, guys, I wanted to talk about real quickly, and we'll go to break in a second. But, you know, UNLV football, we talked about it a little bit before, but, you know, at the opening. And I got to tell you something. For a little bit, I was getting texts by a lot of my friends telling me, well, you better get your ass ready for a tattoo, brother, your first tattoo. UNLV is going to be, because I said I would. And, you know, I was.
I'm the one that originally said it, by the way, and you said, hell, I'm going to jump on with you.
No, I did. I don't have it.
I'm not going to lie to you. I was nervous the first quarter. But I was like, man.
You got tattoos. For me, talking about nervous, I've never had a needle touch my body other than to draw my blood or give me a shot.
I've got seven tattoos.
There you go.
Looking forward to eight.
So it was going to be my very first tattoo. But the point is watching this game, especially in the first half, I was so impressed when USC got close to the red zone or got in the deeper part of the red zone, the back part of the red zone, closer to the 20-yard line, and they were able to hold them out of the end zone. And it was field goal city for the first half of the game.
Look at the first drive
that
of the game.
That was so impressive.
Very first play of the game for UNLV, and Lex Thomas fumbles, recovered by USC inside
like
the 30.
Yeah.
And UNLV's defense, they didn't give up a first down.
Mm-mm.
And I thought there were some moments there where I thought the key actually was the UNLV certainly had a chance to win the game.
You know, Pantel's missed field goal from 39 yards was a killer. I'm sorry.
The drop touchdown.
You can't miss that field goal. And the pass interference penalty.
Well, yeah, that an opportune time for that. But I think the drop touchdown, which then led to Pantel's missing the field goal.
Yes, that hurt.
And then they got that drive. I think it was in the first quarter where the SC punter hit it off the side of his leg and it went like 7 yards.
Yeah, and they wasted it.
They ended up not scoring on that. Yeah. But I do think that Tim Skipper, the pressure's going to be on him now because I think people saw, hey, you know what? This UNLV defense actually isn't as bad as we thought.
There's some players.
You know, Jericho Flowers is back. They've got a lot of guys in the defensive side. Dalton Baker is phenomenal. Here's the thing.
Dalton Baker's a hitter. You know, out of Dalton Bishop Baker, Gorman, man. Bishop Gorman kid.
I'll make it simple.
He played for Sanchez at Bishop Gorman.
That's right, yeah. I'll make it simple. If Dalton Baker is your leading tackler again on the defensive side,
it's going to be a bad season for UNLV.
Bad. And that's not a knock on Dalton Baker. That means
they're getting to the second level of the defense, exactly. Which you can't have.
And I thought the defensive line, they stood up fairly well until the end of the game. They were worn down. I mean,
and how can you blame them? They're outmanned and they're outweighed, and you've got superstar Power 5 athletes on the offensive line for UFC, and you've got Mountain West athletes on a team that has not been very good for the last several years.
But
it was very impressive.
They were not intimidated at all about
Justin
playing USC.
Polo, let me tell you something. Watch this kid. Sanchez talked a little bit about him when I had Sanchez on. This kid blocks out the sun, man. You see the reason Lexington Thomas gets creases. This kid is going to play on Sundays. He's really good.
Well, and here's the key. No one thought you had a chance to win yesterday, and that's fine. You now have UTEP coming up on Saturday, the home opener. UTEP got their asses handed to them at home by Northern Arizona. I mean, that wasn't even a game.
Yeah, I saw
UTEP. Here's the thing for UNLV. I talked about it yesterday on the pregame show. UTEP and San Jose State, they might be arguably the two worst programs in all of D1 football. Those should be two absolute blowout wins by the Rebels. You just got to find four more wins. Prairie View A&M should be a win.
Even though USC had that great fourth quarter, UNLV still covered. They still covered yesterday. Barely, but they covered.
I thought I predicted the score was going to be 35-21 in favor of SC. I was pretty close.
That's a hell of a prediction. I thought it was going to be blowout city just because I thought UNLV wouldn't be able to hang with them defensively. Listen, guys, let's take a break. On the other side, we're going to hear, I got Nightcap coming up. Brian Killingsworth, who is the chief marketing officer for the Vegas Golden Knights, has some news that surprised me as far as what's going to be taking place this year. I mean, it's going to be even better. We'll talk about that. Also, if we get a chance, get a little bit of fantasy football. And don't forget, I got Al Bernstein coming on the show and the second half to talk about the Canelo Triple G Part 2. That should be definitely interesting. And we got some tickets to give away to the 4th annual Box Fan Expo at the Convention Center the day of the big fight at T-Mobile Arena. We'll talk about that a whole lot more. This is Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, a couple cool things about the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't know if you got, well, I'm sure you know, they got permission to put actual gold dust on center ice on the logo, and they had a few fans that were season ticket holders that got a chance to do it. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know what? I prefer my gold in my drinks or in my ice cream. Not necessarily on the ice, but that is very cool. You know, I'm a big Goldschlager guy, so
I'm a fan as well. But I thought that was cool. And the other thing is,
the only thing cooler would have been, I don't think you could freeze Goldschlager, but if they would have put Goldschlager in the ice, that would have been kind of cool.
That would have been really cool. At the end of after the Stanley Cup, they all go down and start licking the logo. Right? Brian Killingsworth, the chief marketing officer, was talking. A matter of fact, to Channel 8, to Chris Matthews, and he was telling him earlier in the week, I saw the interview, that they are actually stepping it up again, and they're saying, we aren't going to believe what we're going to see this year, that it's even going to be a better showcase. I honestly do not know how. The way that I explain this, whenever somebody asks me, what is it like, this is the best example I can give. It is like you go to T-Mobile Arena, you watch this incredible show, and then a hockey game breaks out.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I guess maybe I got a little bit jaded towards the end there because I had seen it about 45 times. At that point, I just thought it was too long. You know, especially during the Stanley Cup with the catapult and, you know, it was just a little long. It was drawn out. And honestly, from someone who's there every single night, my opinion doesn't really matter because I'm in the media. What matters is what the fans think. And if the fans like it, then they got to keep doing what the fans want. And you know, my opinion, your opinion on it, while we're entitled to it, in the grand scheme of things, we're not buying tickets. So it is what the fans want. And if they like it, then that's fine. Then
the fans
want
to see a show. They're in Vegas. Yeah, that's why, like he's saying, yeah, our opinion doesn't matter because we're going to get bored of it because we're going to go to a lot more games than probably other fans are.
Yeah.
So the fact that we see it night in and night out is like, Okay, it is what it is. Can we shorten it out? But I get what Mags is saying.
No, 100%. I think that as a member of the media or even regular season ticket holders that actually attend a lot of the games, it does it tend to get a little bit long and lengthy, and I can get it. And you're gonna, you know, the game's already, they're always trying to figure out how to shorten sporting events. This is making it longer. But here's why I think it's necessary. We got spoiled. We get to go to every game. We get to see all the stuff. If you only get to go to one game and you spend the astronomical amount of money, sorry, Golden Knights, but you charge a lot of money. So for the money they charge, they need to put on a show. I think people want that experience. For the people that only get to go to one game, they want that experience. So unfortunately,
that's just it. Exactly.
How do you pick and choose which games to give the experience that you don't?
It's exactly what you said. My son went to two games last year. He went to go see the St. Louis Blues and the Tampa Bay Lightning. He thought the Open was cool. He didn't care. You know, and for the fans who only go to two games or three games or however many they go to, the show is fine because they enjoy it. So I don't want people to think that I'm ragging on it because I'm not. It doesn't, like I said.
Max, just said when you've seen it 42 times,
yeah,
it's like, okay, you know, I've seen it, been there, done that.
And you know? The funny thing is the Capitals when I, and the Jets show is pretty awesome too. I mean, because that arena is, it's small. It's intimate and it's loud. I could not believe how loud the
Winnipeg Stadium, whatever it's called.
Whatever they call it, it doesn't matter. But that arena is so loud and the fans are crazy. And when they sing the national anthem, the woman who sang the national anthem for the both games I was up there, she literally put down the mic like three lines in, and the Canadian fans,
they sing it.
Every single person is wearing white. There's people dressed up like Mike
God
Myers.
Keep our land and, glorious and free. Yeah. And they belt
the Great
out.
White North, you know. Yep. And you know, they show the video, and it was before the game, and it was narrated by Chris Jericho, the wrestler. And it just shows these winters up there. And, oh, my God, I would not want to live in Winnipeg. My gosh. Those people, first of all, they're unbelievably nice, but very, very tough people up there, too.
No, 100%. Guys, fantasy football, right, this is the draft week. We have very little time to cover this, so I'm just going to pretty much ask you, we'll go around right now because everyone's doing their draft. I'm going to ask you each person your number one pick. Okay, don't pull any punches. None of us are playing. Why am I playing in a league with you? But it doesn't matter. Number one pick, and I want your biggest sleeper. So Mags, you can start it off. Who's your first pick of the draft? If you're a fantasy football owner, and who is a guy that other people might not be thinking of, but they can get in the later rounds in the draft that might help their team?
Well, I didn't have the number one pick in either of the drafts I was in. I had the third pick in my money league, and I ended up taking David Johnson, but I think I would have taken Todd Gurley as the number one player. My sleeper pick, and I took him in both leagues, and I got him late in both leagues, I took Dez Bryant.
Very good pick.
Not on a team, but you know what?
He's going
to
get picked
up. If Dez Bryant happens to sign with the Patriots, or a team that throws the ball, look out, because he could have seven touchdowns. I mean, imagine if that guy ended up in the Patriots. Could you imagine how? And I got him in like the 15th round.
I really like the pick because people aren't thinking Dez Bryant. You're never thinking when they're not on a team. I like that pick. Jose, what do you got?
So if I had the first pick and he's available, I would go with Todd Gurley.
Well, he's going to be available. It's the first pick.
I'm saying if I have a if he's there and I have a high pick, that's what I meant. Yeah. Jeez, thanks, Max. Appreciate it.
He's just saying,
wake me up. Why don't you?
We got you on the ball.
All right, here we go. I'm awake now.
Like Bill Lampier said, jeez. Max just helped you build character.
Thank you. So back to my pick here. If I was up there, yes, I would go with Todd Gurley. I wanted to get him last year, and I didn't. I didn't think he was going to be that great as he did, but I kicked myself in the butt for it. This year, I would take him. My sleeper overall, I do like Adam Thielen from the Minnesota Vikings. I think him and Kirk Cousins are going to have a very, very good connection up there. That's the guy that I think not too many people are going to be high on because of Stephon Diggs and the season that he had.
And
I think everybody's going to be high on him.
I got Diggs and not Thielen. I wanted Thielen too, but
I have a draft tonight, and then my draft for our league that you're going to jump on, Brian, is on Tuesday night. So
I got Monday night with Unglesby.
Okay.
And then I got Tuesday night with you. So I
had
my draft coming up
to take Thielen, and I already had Diggs, so I was really weary about taking two wide receivers on the same team. But, yeah, I did like him a lot.
I'll tell you with mine, you know, simple. I think it's we all agree, Todd Gurley. Everyone is skipping over Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell, yes, was healthy all last season. I'll give him that. But up until last season, he has had traditional injury problems. And Le'Veon Bell runs into the problem that we see a lot of young superstars. It is the 6 inches between their ears. He has that issue. Antonio Brown has that issue. Odell Beckham has that issue. That issue can not necessarily destroy a player, but it can definitely hurt their career, hurt their presence in a locker room, hurt a quarterback's ability to want to get the ball to him. I mean, these are potential issues, and that is why I think Le'Veon Bell is slipping in a few drafts. People think, you know, he's a bit of a prima donna. I think Gurley's great. Now, as far as the sleeper in my I talked about it earlier. You're going to get him with the last pick in your draft. I did this years ago with Cameron Newton because I figured, you know what, I'm never going to play him, but just in case he is better than I think he is, I'm going to pick him with my last pick of the draft, and it ended up winning me the league that year. If you remember his rookie season, he had breakout years. So I'm going to say I'm going to go out on a limb with Baker Mayfield because Josh Gordon is going to come back. And let me tell you something. I don't care how much marijuana Josh Gordon smokes. The dude can play wide receiver as well as anybody in the league. He is dynamic, he is electrifying, and he has great hands, number one. Number two is a guy like Dez Bryant. If the Browns start looking like they can potentially win a few games and Baker Mayfield starts distributing the ball around and destroying accurate passes, that would intrigue a guy like Dez Bryant to go there, play on the other side of a Josh Gordon. Look out for Baker Mayfield. I'm just saying.
So you're saying that Tyrod Taylor is not going to be there and it's not going to be the guy.
He's going to be the guy to begin the season with,
I'm sorry,
I think.
It's Tyrod. If you've been watching Hard Knocks, it's Tyrod.
But here's the deal. Like I said, you're talking about a sleeper. And one other thing I want to say about the NFL before we cut to our break is, man, the Raiders really screwed up in this one. They screwed
the
pooch,
man. Dropped
the
ball huge.
I cannot believe they let Khalil Mack get away. As much as I love Von Miller in Denver, Khalil Mack is the best defensive player in the National Football League. He is just now entering his prime. It is a huge mistake. $141 million, the highest paid defensive player in the history of the National Football League. 90 of it's guaranteed. He has, I guess the Bears also got a second round draft pick and a conditional pick in 2020. What the Raiders got, not too bad. They got first round picks the next 2 years, a sixth round pick next year, and a third rounder in 2020. I don't care what you got. Oakland or future Las Vegas. Horrible move. And the fact that you sent him to the Bears. Can you leave my Lions alone? I was trying to fall in love with the Raiders like I did the Golden Knights. I'm trying. They play in the AFC. They wouldn't affect my Lions until the Super Bowl, which is fine. But you have to go and give the best defensive player in football to a guy we got to play twice a year, Matthew Stafford. Man, oh man, he's been upright for like 8 seasons straight now. And now he's got to face Khalil Mack 2 times a year.
Well, you might want to send him a mattress for this season. Yeah. He might be on his back a lot.
We got to take a break. We're going to come back on the other side. We'll talk to I think Alan Snell is coming on board. We got Chuck Johnson we're trying to get a hold of, or Jim Gemma, Al Bernstein, and hopefully even at the end of it, if we can get Alonzo on for the Box Fan Expert. We got to take a break.
We got to hurry up.
Line Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Western Conference champion Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman. Jose Valente, to my right on your radio dial, right in front of me, producer extraordinaire Chris Magnum Chapman. And on the phone right now, in his 8th season as the general manager for the Las Vegas 51s, as they wrap up their final season at Cashman Field. Man, it's been one hell of a run. Chuck, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thank you very much.
So tell me, I mean, excitement, you got a game tonight, then it all culminates, the finale tomorrow. We're all talking, I know me and Magnum are going, Jose's trying to go tomorrow. I definitely want to be at the last game ever at Cashman Field, 12 noon tomorrow. Are you expecting a big turnout?
Yeah, actually we are. So we're looking forward to it. You know, it's always a tough day, Labor Day. When you finish on Labor Day, it's the last day of the season, so you always do a day game. Across the league. It's a getaway day for the players that aren't getting called up, the guys that want to go home after a long summer. So, you know, we're having this day game as a matter of tradition, and it's going to be the last one at Cashman. So we're really hoping that, you know, a lot of people come out for it. We're anticipating a good crowd. Ticket sales have been picking up over the past few days, and we know that every season ticket holder is going to go to pay their respects to the last game, and we're hoping that a lot of the baseball fans in Las Vegas will also be there.
He is Chuck Johnson, general manager of the Las Vegas 51s. The Sacramento River Cats are the opponents today. Actually, tonight they play their final night game, if you want to see it under the lights, and then tomorrow it is a 12:05 start on the holiday, and definitely get out there and check it out. Chuck, the anticipation of this move out to Summerlin, it's been there for a while. I know it's something you have been looking forward to and you haven't been able to talk about for years. You, like, hide out and don't want to go on talk shows because you get asked the same questions. I know Don Logan's been looking forward to this. Man, how great is it that it's... I know they're still building, but how great is it that it's finally here? You guys are finally making this transition to move, and you don't have to thwart all the questions anymore.
Oh, no, it's fantastic. You know, Don Logan, our president, has been working a long time to get this done, and I started with the team in 1995, and I think it was 96, 97 when we first started talking about a new stadium, and it was tied to spring training, and then it was, how do we get one for ourselves, and so on and so on. And so finally in 2019, that's all going to come to fruition. The if you haven't been by yet, I mean, the steel is up. We've got the framework from the third base side all the way around to the press box of the steel girders, and now we're going to start moving up the first baseline, and the progress is really moving quickly, and it's exciting to see it come out of the ground as quickly as it has.
Las Vegas, the home of architectural miracles that I've never seen anything like it. City National Arena, it went up so quick, and it is such a beautiful facility. You guys will be basically right next door to it. I am so excited to see the finished product. What initially to you, Chuck, is going to really stand out to people about this new stadium?
Well, you know, I'll tell you one. There's actually two sets of things that'll happen here. You're going to walk in the gate, and you're going to see a 35-foot by 125-foot scoreboard out in left center field. But it'll be the 23rd largest scoreboard in all of baseball. So we're going to be bigger than some big league teams. You're going to notice the pool in center field. You're going to notice finally a kids' play area behind that center field, a little splash pad for kids. The bullpens are going to be out of play. They're going to be right in front of the right field berm. The ability to walk around the whole ballpark on, you know, one 360 concourse, the food amenities, the beverage selection, the club upstairs, the 22 suites, and honestly, that is what the fans will get to see when they walk in. The real testament to this ballpark is going to be what has been done for the player amenities, transforming a 36-year-old ballpark at Cashman Field and what, you know, existed when they built the thing in 82, 83, that wasn't a big concentration. Well, you know, now it is. These are million-dollar players. They're huge investments for the affiliate. We've got two tunnels inside for hitting and pitching. We've got spacious, large clubhouses for both the visiting team and the home team, knowing that, you know, we have a big history of hosting Major League Baseball games here, so we had to make sure that both sides had adequate space to facilitate what we do. It's going to be off the charts from a player perspective, and the fans are going to be taken care of immensely.
Can't wait. Looking very forward to it. We got 45 seconds left with you. Two questions, and I'll fire them both at you. Number one is we're all waiting to find out what is going to be the name of the next, because it's not going to be the 51s from what I understand. And I know you can't expose it. We're all betting here. I'm just going to tell you we're betting on the Oakland A's. But how close are you to having that AAA affiliate locked up?
You know, it's interesting. So our season ends tomorrow. There's a two-day period where everybody sends in to the leagues, Major League and the minor leagues, if they're going to renew or not. Then 2 days later, we get notice from the leagues that these are the teams available. The Major League affiliates get notice that these are the city, the minor league cities available. Then there's about a week period that you can talk back and forth openly. And then we are not allowed to announce anything until September 16th.
All right, well, I'm just going to let you know that I'm going to be looking like a Granny Smith apple. I went out and bought a bunch of green and yellow material. So that's my guess, people. He is Chuck Johnson, general manager of Las Vegas 51s. Chuck, we love having you affiliated with the show. I enjoy the hell out of going out to Cashman Field, and I am looking so forward to the new ballpark.
Well, thanks very much. Look us up tomorrow when you come out.
Absolutely, we'll definitely check out. Chuck Johnson, GM, Las Vegas 51s. This is the Las Vegas 51s report, brought to you by the Las Vegas 51s. They are out of this world. We're going right back out to the phone lines. We've got Alan Snell on the line with our LV Sports Biz Minute. And, of course, Alan, as always, we're behind, but you got something good to talk about. What a segue, 51s, into a guy that's been here for like 31 years, Russ Langer, and the story you wrote on him.
Yeah, he's an unbelievable story. It is a great segue, guys. 31 years broadcasting radio in the minors at all the levels. He's people don't realize this. He actually broadcast AAA baseball for two other teams before he came to Las Vegas 19 years ago. And he's been up for some substitution activity. He worked for the Montreal Expos and the Baltimore Orioles pinch hitting. He's come very close, and it's a great story of perseverance, dedication to his craft. He loves baseball, and by the way, he actually did the UNLV-USC football game yesterday as well.
Yeah, that's his.
So I had a great time to chat with him. He was gracious in giving me more than an hour of his time earlier this week, and we talked talked about the minor league baseball. He had also a very brief stint, a year at Vero Beach in the Florida State League, which is I'm very familiar with, and we talked minor league baseball in Florida and in Vero. So check that story out. You're right. He's a really terrific guy. Great story.
Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com. We've got the LV Sports Biz Minute. He is Russ Langer, great voice, and to me, the best guy. Play-by-play and color together, he's awesome. All right, we're moving on. Alan, appreciate you. We'll have him on next week with the LV Sports Biz Minute. On the phone right now.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
It's a fact. On Saturday, September 15th, Saul Canelo Alvarez will take on Triple G at T-Mobile Arena. It was postponed on May 5th, and let me tell you, this fight will absolutely, in no way, shape, or form, end in a draw. And here to hopefully help me explain why is one of the greatest boxing analysts of all time. And if I had more time, I would mention all of his well-deserved accolades. Al Bernstein, thanks for joining Out of Line.
Nice to be with you.
So what do you think? There's no way in hell this ends in a draw, right? No way.
Well, I'm going to say probably not, unless, of course, you know, it's such a close fight that somehow it does. But I would say it's a remote possibility. I'm going to say that chances are it will end in a decision, or some people think there could be a stoppage in this fight. I don't know if there will be, because Golovkin has one of the best chins of the last decade or two decades in boxing. And while Golovkin didn't land all of the power punches he wanted to, he landed some big punches against Canelo, and perhaps to the surprise of some, Canelo was able to withstand that and not get in big trouble in the fight. I think the chances of a knockout are a little less.
You know, the one thing that we do know is only Dave Moretti is going to be back sitting ringside. The only one that I think scored the fight exactly the way I had it scored, 115-113, in favor of Triple G. I thought it was an excellent fight. To me, without question, the fight of 2017. But I thought that it was just a sham that it was a draw. And the fact that Adelaide Byrd voted, well, I don't want to get into that. I've spent many radio shows on the 118-110 decision, which was just terrible. Two different guys step in. What do you expect to see in this fight, Al?
Well, you know, Golovkin was very effective in the last fight in establishing his jab. He won the fight with his jab. That was the dominant force. So from Canelo's standpoint, I think the key element is for them to find a way to mitigate that. One of the ways would be for Canelo to use his jab more often. If you out-jab a jabber, that's how you negate it. And Canelo has a decent jab, but Canelo is very economical in his punches, so he's not the kind of guy to use the jab incessantly in a fight. So I think Golovkin will establish the jab again. I think Golovkin's game plan is to try and land more power punches and find a way to follow that jab with right hands and left hooks. The other thing I think Golovkin wants to do more of is go to the body. He's one of the best body punchers in the sport. He didn't do that as much. Part of the reason was because Canelo moved more. Canelo showed more foot speed and mobility that I think most of us thought he was capable of. And from Canelo's standpoint, I think the trick is to do just enough of that mobility that gave Golovkin some problems in the first fight, but stand his ground a little bit more and do more volume. I mean, if I was in Canelo's training camp, I would look at those the punch profile numbers from the last fight, and I would literally say, okay, let's look at these numbers. We need to up these by 6, 7, 8, 9 punches a round. So if you feel like you're not going to have a calculator in your head, but if you feel like you're in a round and your output is less, you've got to step it up because punch volume was a big issue for Canelo, and he took rounds off. This has been the one Achilles heel, I think, of Canelo Alvarez in his career, that there are moments in fights where he literally can't seem to fight a 12-round fight in which he is, for the most part, aggressive throughout. He needs lull periods, whether that's a conditioning issue, which some people suggest, or just a mental issue in the fight, I don't know. So he's going to need to have more volume. And for him, one of the positives is that he showed he could take the power of Golovkin.
Al, not only that, you talked about the numbers. I actually have them right in front of me. And Triple G out-jabbed him basically 31-18 average thrown in every single round. The percentage was 22%. That's a big difference. Now, my question that I've always had about boxing, and I wrote an article about this fight that I was very upset, is why do we have CompuBox numbers if these CompuBox numbers show you who's actually landing and who's doing more in the fight, but then we have these referees giving these type of, you know, decisions? It's mind-boggling to me.
Well, I think CompuBox numbers are, you know, nobody says they're 100% official. They're guidelines. They're good guidelines. They're good guidelines for a discussion like the one we're having. Like you're saying, you look, you know, 31 jabs to 18 and how many was landed. I wouldn't want to see that be the basis of a decision necessarily, but they certainly, if you look at the numbers of that fight, it tells you that the 118-110 score is a sham, right? But what it also tells you is that 115-113 either way is possible, though it seems more likely 115-113 for Golovkin. So I think they're good numbers for guidelines. They're great for announcers to announce. They're great for fans to look at. I just don't know if I'd want them to be the guideposts. Now, my way of scoring boxing, I have a theory on how boxing should be scored. And also, by the way, the punch profile, what makes them a little more accurate is one guy takes one fighter is the way it's done. It's hard to count punches if you're looking at both fighters. But having said that, I think the way boxing matches should be scored is each judge should have two giant buttons sitting there. And they should hit the button for whatever fighter they think landed a punch, a big button so they can't miss it, so they have to look down. Then at the end of the round, they hit a printout. Those numbers then are guidelines to them to remind them what they saw in the last round. It doesn't mean their count's going to be totally accurate or whatever, because I think judges literally forget what they saw. And this would be their opinion of it. So so counting punches isn't a bad idea, even for judges. It's just that you have to use it as a guideline.
A giant staple button for each box for each boxing
big
official.
Buttons yep. that you can't miss.
I love it.
And you hit them.
I love it. Well, you know, a couple of things. Well, I know they wanted Kenny Bayless as the third man in the ring, but it's turning out to be Benji Estevez. What do you think the kind of fight that he would call?
Well, Benji is a competent referee. I think they were against Tony Weeks. They didn't want Tony Weeks to judge to ref the fight. I think it's Benji is a competent referee. Boxing is, be honest, suffers from larger numbers of good referees. That's one of the issues with the sport that I currently have. But I think Benji would be a fair and decent arbiter in the ring.
I surely hope so. And hey, my distant cousin that I don't know, Glenn Feldman, is going to be one of the judges ringside, replacing Adelaide Bird and Don Trello from the first fight. So who knows? I don't know that cousin, but maybe I have one. Al, really,
he's your cousin, huh? Well, Glenn's a good judge.
No, not my cousin. I'm teasing. We just have the same last name. That's all. But Al, listen, really appreciate it on the show. Looking very forward to the fight. It's a week from tonight, or excuse me, a week from yesterday, next Saturday night. I'm looking very forward. T-Mobile Arena will be packed. And I said 2017 was the fight of the year, no question about it. I think we're going to see just as good. You're talking about street fighters that are going to go into it and brawl.
Well, I think it's going to be a good fight. In 2018, like 2017, has been a terrific year for the product of boxing. So there have been many great fights this year. And we have a good one coming up. In fact, this coming week on Showtime, Sean Porter and Danny Garcia, that I'll be calling from the Barclays Center as part of this fall time. The year's been great, and there's a whole bunch of good fights coming up. And by the way, I want to extend an invitation to you 4 days after the Canelo fight. I want to invite you to come over to the Italian American Club, where I'm going to be doing my music show.
You know, we'll absolutely come over there. I know that.
That's a great restaurant, by the way. I've eaten there a bunch of times.
We're going to go check him out. We'll go watch Al. I'd love to see it, man.
Is that in the showroom, or are you on the stage?
We'll have a drink together.
The showroom or the stage, Al?
Pardon?
Is it the showroom or the stage where you'll be?
It's in the lounge area.
The lounge area. Okay, we're definitely going to see
it. Come on over. You can have a drink. We'll schmooze.
Give us the date again. Shout out the date so everyone can come. What's the date?
Yeah, September. It's September 19th from 6 to 10. I'll be doing music shows. My son Wes, who's a talented singer-songwriter, he's done the anthems at many big fights here in town. He's going to be performing with me, so we're going to have a lot of fun.
Very cool.
He is Al Bernstein. Showtime. If you don't know who Al Bernstein is, you just don't watch fighting, so you probably aren't interested in this segment. Anyways, Al, really appreciate
your life
joining.
Is meaningless.
He's a Vegas native, like the rest of us here. Appreciate you, Al. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
You take care.
Absolutely, Mags. Try to get a hold of if you can, Alonzo. We're up just about time. Well, I'll tell you what. I've listened to Al for years, and I have learned a great deal about the sport of boxing.
Very knowledgeable.
From listening to Al since my knowledge goes back into the early 80s when he was a boxing analyst for ESPN, did a lot of other sports as well. Very knowledgeable guy. Wrote a couple of great books on boxing as well. His boxing, I think it was Boxing 101, or I can't remember what it was called. It was like a starter book for boxing. Was absolutely, if you don't understand the sport of boxing, Al wrote this in like 1978. Really check it out. Great book. Number to always call, 702-876-1340. We're just about out of time. Don't forget, the Box Fan Expo is coming up. The date of the fight, the date of the Canelo fight, it is going to be going on at the Las Vegas Convention Center. $30 admission to get in. We're going to give away a couple more tickets today at 702-876-1340. We'll give you free admission. It is going to be an unbelievable event. As Al Bernstein said, it's awesome. Alonzo's on the air right now. Alonzo is actually the producer of the event. It's the fourth annual. And just had Al Bernstein on the show. Getting ready for a big, big boxing weekend next weekend, Alonzo. Nope, there you go.
I'm here.
Oh, no, that's
right. Boxing Expo, baby.
Tell us, man. We're waiting for the plug. Can you hear me? Alonzo. Go ahead, man.
We're going to have the biggest... I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question?
No, I just said tell us about it, man. We want to hear about it. We got it coming up in a little over a week.
Go ahead and plug the Expo, brother.
Yep. 2 weeks. I keep saying a week. Sir. It's two weeks.
So we got the Boxing Expo on September 15th at the Las Vegas Convention Center. It's the biggest, right up before the fight, you can meet and greet all the top boxing celebrities. We got fighters like Tommy Hearns, Eric Morales, we got the company of Mayweather Promotions, Fernando Vargas, and we just added this week none other than Errol Spence, The Truth, and then also we added Andre S.O.G. Ward to the incredible list of fighters. We also have Mikey Garcia in the building at the Boxing Expo, Abner Maris, James Toney, Badu Jack, David Benavidez, Jesse Vargas, Eric Morales, and we keep adding fighters every single week. Over 30 top superstars to meet and greet on September 15th on the Canelo Triple G fight weekend. On the same day, you can come from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. before the fight and meet all these great legends and all over 30 boxing companies and have an incredible day of boxing for all the fans.
That's really cool. Box for those of you that can't go to the fights.
BoxFanExpo.com. BoxFanExpo.com. Get the tickets right now. There are early still a few tickets left at $30 online. Very cheap. To go inside and meet all your greatest boxing heroes that you can do.
Hey, we've given away six pairs already. We're going to give one more pair away today again on the air. Right now, 702-876-1340. Give the studio line again. We'll hook you up with a pair of admission tickets to get into the fourth annual Box Fan Expo. The day of the Canelo Triple G fight. $30 to get in. You better get your tickets now if you don't win them here. Hey, we're out of time. Alonzo, appreciate you. We'll have him on again next week as we pump it up one more time. I'm Brian Feldman for Jose Vellante, for producer Chris Magnum Chapman. We want to thank Al Bernstein, Alonzo, Chuck Johnson, and Alan Snell for being part of it as well. We are here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll see you next week, same time, same place. I'm out.